Welcome to another broadcast of the Word for Life radio program. And as usual, with me in the studio is my friend and Dr. Les Ola, Chancellor of Northern Baptist Bible College. Doc, we've been talking about protecting our children in a decaying culture. And you gave us a wonderful teaching last time about that first stage, that bullseye in the concentric circles of learning how to help our children in that control stage, I think you called it. Can you kind of recap for us and then take us on to the next point?
We said a child needs to learn how to listen and then obey. And that is before he's 5 years old.
Right.
We cannot try to work that in later. That has to be done. Cannot let a child just run wild. We cannot let him disobey, because then that becomes a life pattern. Then we said to train means to initiate, to set the taste, means to dedicate that child and to educate that child.
You use the illustration of that date, somebody taking the meat of a date and rubbing it on the mouth of that child.
Yeah, on the palate. So that child is a small baby, has a taste set.
That is such a vivid picture.
Yeah, for what is coming. And we get our taste set. Our homes have to be setting right taste if we want them to have a right mentality as they get older in life.
Right.
We cannot let them get turned aside in areas like that. Then we're going to go into the stage of counsel, and that is early adolescence. And that on my chart I have from 13 to 15, but actually today kids seem to be maturing maybe a couple of years earlier than that, maybe 11 and 12 years old. We know at the beginning of adolescence there is a real change takes place. Physical changes take place. Emotional changes take place.
You know, I've heard you use a story here to try to help, and I think our listeners would love to hear that.
Well, any of you who have children who are entering adolescence or maybe in early adolescence, you may be able to relate to some of these depending on the personality of your child. But I'll often say when I'm speaking in seminars, I ask how many of you have junior high children to raise their hand. Then I say, let's meet for prayer right after this session, because we think, especially if it's the first child, because we're not ready for some of the changes that take place. Other families have never experienced anything but positive things. Others have experienced some real difficulties in making that adjustment. And I do believe much of it has to come from backgrounds. Who is praying for us? Those of us who did not have Christian backgrounds are hurting in the fact that we do not have praying families, that is praying parents,
right,
and praying grandparents.
But we don't think about that very often sometimes.
And some who have been so blessed to have godly heritage and godly parents and praying relatives are greatly benefited and protected.
And let me interrupt you here, because I know we have some grandparents that might be in our listening audience. And maybe you can speak a word to them about the impact of their prayers on this.
Oh, it is so crucial. I think the greatest thing that has to happen is the praying that we do as parents and as grandparents, because we have to have God's mind and God's wisdom to control the heart of those children.
Right.
But back to our story, a mother comes in to see the pastor and says, "Pastor, I need to tell you something, and please don't breathe a word, but I think my son is demon-possessed." Pastor said, "What do you mean?" "Well, we were having his 13th birthday party, and we were all happy and celebrating, and then we lit the candles, and he blew the candles out. And through that rising smoke, I saw that face and that look, and he just has never been the same. And I think maybe at that point he may have been possessed." And the pastor graciously says, "What birthday was it? 13th? "Well, that's not demon possession. That's adolescence. They're very similar in outward characteristics."
We can relate to that. There are a whole lot of parents that are going to say amen to that.
And then 2 weeks later, guess who comes to see the pastor? That boy. And he says, "Pastor, if I share something, would you please don't breathe a word, but I think my mother's possessed." And pastor says, "What do you mean?" "Well, we're having my 13th birthday party, and I blew the candles out through that rising smoke. I saw the look on mom's face. She has never been the same. She doesn't know who she is. She questions her own identity. She says, don't forget who I am. I'm your mother." And that is a great relief to a 13-year-old boy wondering, who is that woman in our house?
I've got an 8-year-old son. We started way early.
Yeah. When finally that mother identifies, "I'm the mother," that's like a huge load lifted off the heart of that child. Of course, we're being a little bit facetious here, but sometimes the greatest humor is reality slightly exaggerated.
Exactly.
To illustrate the point, we are entering another phase of life where there are physical changes, emotional changes. They may actually act like they're questioning what they've been taught, which has a tendency to put panic in the heart of that parent.
Sure it does.
When they come home with questions, well, where would that question have come from? And why would you question God, or why would you doubt the Bible? And this is the stage when they need real counsel. If I were to say the most crucial position for the next generation, the most crucial position in a church is the position of those working with junior high kids, whether it's Sunday school teacher, whether it's the youth pastor, or whoever it may be, because it is at that stage of life when there is an awkwardness and they really wonder who cares and they really wonder who loves. If there's any position where you have to have a spirit-filled believer, that has to be those working with junior high kids.
And he has to like kids.
Oh, they have to. But that has to be a God-given thing, too. Beyond a like, you have to love.
Right.
Because many times there's not much likable when these kids get acting junior high age.
That's for sure.
And they are to counsel. There are three guards that I give youth workers and us as parents at this stage. One guard, we need to guard our expectations. We do that by remembering. Remember, they are 13, not 30. We ask ourselves, when did we surrender? When did we let God have control of our lives? And I say, you remember when you were 13, you would get up in the morning at 5:30, go to your knees in prayer and pray till 6:30, and then say, my, I need to get into the Word. And then you pray. After that, you get into the Word from 6:30 to 7, say, I have to shower quickly, get down to the breakfast table, and Mom's at the table, and you hug Mom and say, Mom, you're a blessing. I never take a meal for granted. I love you. And then you go to Dad and say, Dad, you work hard. I don't take one day of your work for granted. I love you. And then you hug Dad. Then on the way to school, you pray for your teachers. I said, well, kids aren't like that anymore. Then you stop to think, maybe I wasn't that way either when I was 13
say,
years old.
That's how kids were when I was growing up. I was out of the box.
So guard expectations by remembering that a 13-year-old is a 13-year-old.
Sure.
Then you guard your example. That's how you gain respect. Because you cannot be saying one thing and doing something else and expect the junior high to just all of a sudden overlook it like a 2-year-old. Because they will pick up on that very quickly.
Boy, they do.
Then you guard your expressions. That's your reactions. And there is a danger that can happen at that point.
I think that's hard for parents. I know you just said something that rang with me because, you know, when your children are in that early 1 to 2 stage, they don't always pick up on your inconsistencies. And so it's pretty easy to say, well, you know, I'm doing okay as a parent. But boy, when they hit 9, 10, 11, 12, they sure do pick up on those inconsistencies.
Well, they do. I mean, for example, we were doing a study when our kids were just, I mean, actually pre-adolescent. We did 2 weeks on each of the fruit of the Spirit, and I wrote material, and then we would take that, and we gave ourselves a project. We would remind ourselves that I was to remind the kids, and they were to remind me and Charlene, et cetera, when we were
violating. Bad project.
And we were studying patience. And I was going to a meeting up in Utica, Michigan. We were driving just from Roseville. I left with an hour to spare as a short drive. And Sunday afternoon to go and preach a night service in Utica, Michigan. And I'm at a traffic light, and it is unbelievable. I have to wait forever to try to get a left turn. I said, where is everybody going? I said, why doesn't anybody stay home? They said, well, you're out. I said, well, we're going somewhere. These people are just out driving, Sunday afternoon driving. Then one of the kids from the back said, Daddy, is God testing your patience? As a little brat, I should have left her home. But what she was doing was reminding me of that. That is, this is what we are, you know, what we are to be doing. And so we went through all the fruit of the Spirit in that kind of a study, and we asked for it. When kids get to a certain age, they start noticing those inconsistencies.
Those are great guards. Tell us.
Guard your expectations by remembering. Guard your example. That's how you gain respect. And guard your reactions. Guard your expressions. That's the showing of your reactions.
Maybe you could park there for a little bit for us.
Yeah, because as we angrily respond, we are driving that child a direction that is completely unlike what we want, as we mentioned in earlier broadcasts. And as we have our hearts established in grace, we need to let the fruit of the Spirit be controlling us in that matter.
So how does this tie in with the council circle that you've got here?
Well, for one reason, we are to counsel. It's no longer just making a dictum. That's where you ask questions, where a question stirs a conscience, an accusation hardens a will.
Right.
When the child is young, we just make a dictum. When they get to this stage, we now begin start helping them make choices and make decisions that they make in their life. The three reasons we don't counsel. One is out of ignorance. We don't know. That's why we need to be taught the word. Another reason is because of indifference. We know but don't care. The third one is impatience. We know and care deeply, but we do it wrongly.
I see.
So three reasons why we don't counsel.
And that just has devastating effect on our children.
I believe it turns them, at this stage, it turns them a direction from which they may not recover for many, many years. Because they get deeply hurt. They don't say anything for a while, but we begin seeing that in reactions. They're silenced, they're slammed doors, they go into their rooms, they don't communicate. And then, of course, we as parents come out swinging. When I was your age, we did so and so and such and such.
Yeah.
And boy, we get into some stories. The snow was deeper back then, and the hills were bigger, and the schoolhouse was colder, and teachers were older, and behind our back,
they're not even listening.
They're not even listening.
You know, you talked about those three reasons we don't counsel. If I were a parent and I were ignorant, and that's why I wasn't doing this, what would you recommend I do?
That's where you have to get in the house of God and get under the teaching of the word, get in a parent training class, get with the people who are mentoring. That's why when I was a youth pastor, I didn't call myself youth pastor. I called myself parent helper. I said, I'm not your youth pastor. I'm your parent helper. You get in Deuteronomy chapter 5 and Deuteronomy chapter 6, you see
right.
How God's plan was manifested in that. And God taught Moses. Moses taught the parents. The parents were to go home and teach the children in Deuteronomy chapter 6 by word and by example.
What about if I'm indifferent?
Well, it's a giving up mentality. If that's what they want, let them have it. Well, as a parent, we cannot let that happen at that stage. But normally it comes out of great frustration.
Or tiredness.
We already feel like we're failures. And so we're not going to deal with it. And the mother ends up bearing the brunt of that. And then if we are impatient, we know and care deeply, but we do it wrongly, then we're still ending up with a bad product. So we need to have the wisdom of God and the fruit of the Spirit manifested in our lives. So as issues come up.
We do thank you so much for listening. We appreciate your prayers and all of the letters and calls and emails that we get. And we'd love to hear from you. If we could be a blessing in some way, if we could carry a burden with you or share the load with you, we'd love to do that. We also could use your prayers and your support for the ongoing ministry of the broadcast. And for those of you that feel impressed by the Lord, send in a donation of $10 or more. We would love to give you a copy of Dr. Olala's life story, A Man Among Them.